listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Fergie's book sees Roy Keane spitting fire of Sir Alex Ferguson's second autobiography, takes shots at Keane, Beckham and Van Nistelrooy. We'll have reaction throughout the week. Reaction as well to the Champions League games from last night. And wasn't it fantastic to see Kaká back in the San Siro and playing well for the Rossoneros? They got a 1-1 draw against Barcelona. In the big game tonight, Real Madrid against Juventus. We look ahead to some of the big stories in the Champions League this evening. And of course, we'll take a look at the disaster that was CONCACAF Champions League. Club America out after a 1-0 loss to Alajuelense in the Azteca. Is it cursed? Is it not? We will talk with Rafa G on his birthday about that. Welcome to World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and the views from around the world of football. My voice is dying here today, so we will go straight into chatting with some of our guests. And I'm delighted to say that we have our first guest ready and waiting for us on the line already. He's a man who we always enjoy talking all things Spanish football, and with an El Clasico coming up on the weekend, Real Madrid taking on Juventus, Sociedad taking on United, and of course, big games as well for Barcelona and for Atletico Madrid last night. There's only one man we should really be chatting to, and that's Goal.com's very own Mr. Ben Hayward joining me on the line today. Ben, how are you doing today, mate? It's a pleasure to have you back on WFD.
I'm very good, thanks, Ollie. How about yourself? You're sounding a little croaky there.
Yeah, cheers for that. I wondered if you'd notice or not, mate. It's a rough day today for doing this sort of job, but we'll get through it. We'll get through it.
Excellent.
And I guess it's like last night for Barcelona, you know, had to just try and get through it after going down and conceding so early. What did you make of Barca's performance in the San Siro last night?
Well, I thought the defence was a little sloppy. Certainly they started off poorly, and Mascherano made that bad mistake, and then Piqué was showing up a little bit in the goal, wasn't he? And they didn't look comfortable at all, I thought, last night. So that's a little bit of a worry. In the end, I think it was probably a fair result, and I think they had one eye on the Clásico, so it's a little bit difficult to really judge the performance. Obviously, you know, Barca and Milan have played each other so many times over these last 2 years that, yeah, a draw is almost to be expected. You know, I mean, they know each other so well. It tends to be kind of slow tempo games, and yeah, I think probably suited both teams in the end.
Did Barca have maybe one eye on El Clasico at the weekend as well, though? The draw against Osasuna, they aren't looking as comfortable as they have done in previous years, although still with a very solid start to the season.
That's right. I mean, they're still unbeaten, but they would have been expected to win at Osasuna. But that's a difficult fixture. I mean, we've seen Barca slip up at Osasuna before. We've seen Madrid lose at Osasuna. So I don't think it was a bad result. And I mean, taken into context, after the 8 wins in a row in La Liga, I don't think it's anything to get too dramatic about. Last night, I thought Messi was, obviously he scored a great goal, but he looked a little bit off the pace. He's coming back. Yeah, it's another draw. But again, you know, most teams would be happy with a draw at San Siro. The big one is the game on Saturday, isn't it?
We will get into El Clasico in just a minute. Just finally on Barca's performance from last night, Neymar was surprisingly poor. He's had a few critical reviews around the place as well from last night. Were you surprised that he didn't take to the big occasion? Because these sorts of young stars, you kind of hope that thrown into a big game like this, that they really rise to the top.
That's right. He was a little disappointing, and he missed a couple of good chances, and he certainly didn't look himself. And one of the things that we seem to be seeing now and again is that when Messi comes back into the team, one or two of the other players sort of go back into their shells, and that's a little bit disappointing. We need to obviously Martino needs to work on this, because I thought when Messi was absent, Neymar was incredibly very, very good. And last night he wasn't very impressive. Alexis was disappointing. Both of them have been pretty good lately, and it's something they need to work on.
I suppose that plays into the hands of people who say that Barca are kind of reliant on Messi. Seeing that and players shying away from taking responsibility, really, when Messi's on the pitch.
I think that there's an element of truth in that, and I mean certainly they rely upon him, as any team would. You know, rely on a player of Messi's talent, but certainly when he's perhaps, you know, as we've talked about before, when he's perhaps a little bit off his game, or obviously when he's injured or coming back from an injury, they do need alternatives. And certainly Neymar was signed as, you know, obviously to complement Messi, to give Barcelona something different, but also I feel as a kind of long-term successor to Leo. Obviously Neymar's only 21. Messi's only 26, but he's not going to go on forever. And I think that was the real thinking behind the signing of Neymar. And it's early days, you know. At 21, you're going to get inconsistent performances from a player. But I do think that Neymar will come good.
You say kind of a successor to Messi, and that Messi can't go on forever. Are we seeing this year that Messi is fallible with the injuries picking up? Would that worry you at all if you were a Barca fan?
Well, I think he needs to look at it. You read the contrasting things about Messi. You know, some people are saying that he's one of those players that needs to play all the time, and when he stops, that's when the problems start. That's because of the way his muscle kind of configuration. But I think that actually over the summer, what he really needed was, you know, especially after kind of an injury-plagued season last year, was to take a little bit of time off. And now he traveled all around the world, played in exhibition matches, benefit matches, all that sort of thing. And I think really a rest would have done him good. And then he could have, you know, come back to full training with Barcelona and he would have been fine. You know, it's a guy, Messi's a guy who wants to play all the time. He loves playing, you know, being a friendly, a serious match, a training match, a benefit match, any match. He wants to play all the time. But he's got to realise that he's not 21, 22 anymore, and it's taking his toll a little bit on his body. So I think if he can adjust his habits a little bit, he can go on for a few more years. But, I mean, the guy's been playing since a young age, and he has to take care of himself.
You talk about teams that have had good starts to the season. Of course, Barcelona still unbeaten. A side that have got really their first blemish now on the year is Atletico Madrid. They're losing to Espanyol, but really the last month or so, when you take in Champions League performances, when you take in the win against Real Madrid, I mean, this has been about as good as it gets, surely, for Atletico Madrid and their fans.
Well, it's incredible. I mean, yeah, they it was in many ways typical Atletico, wasn't it? They had the chance to go top of La Liga and they couldn't do it. But, you know, still 8 wins out of 9. It's a fantastic start to the season. And as you say, Ollie, I mean, they've gone to some really difficult places and come away with wins. You know, they went to the Bernabeu and got the win there and deserved it. They went to Real Sociedad and won. They went to Sevilla and won. You know, they've won 3 out of 3 in the Champions League and been really, really impressive. So, I mean, great time to be an Atletico fan right now.
Would you be worried, because they're obviously the big clubs around Europe are starting to circle on their talent once again? You know, obviously they lost Falcao, but Diego Costa and Koke as well are really getting a lot of interest, especially in the English papers at the moment. What's the likelihood of Atletico, should one of these bigger sides maybe come in, being able to keep hold of them?
Well, obviously, I mean, you're right. You know, they've got a lot of very, very good players, and Diego Costa in particular has been absolutely outstanding. Liverpool came in for him, didn't they, in the summer? And it was interesting to see his quotes. He said, "I've worked so hard to find a place at Atletico that there's no way that I'd consider leaving at the moment. You know, obviously, there are bigger clubs than Liverpool these days, or more successful clubs than Liverpool these days. So one of them could potentially come in, but it's interesting what he says. I mean, this is a guy who's been out on loan to countless different teams. He really did have to work hard to find a place at Atletico, and it's now that he's really reaping the benefits, of being able to hold down a place. And you know, he's incredibly suited to Simeone's system. So I think he'll weigh that up, and I think he'll realise that it's probably the best place for him to be right now.
Almost like the Andros Townsend, if you will, of Atletico Madrid, you know, thriving out on loan and then coming back and putting in the performances.
Well, I'll be, as a Spurs fan, I'll be happy if Andros Townsend develops into a player as good as Diego Costa. You never know.
let's hope so for England's sake. Maybe not for Tottenham's sake, Ben, but let's hope okay. So for England. Atletico, of course, cross-town rivals Real Madrid. They play tonight, as do Real Sociedad. Madrid have got this tough game against Juventus, but it's a Juventus side that have found complacency in Serie A, in the domestic league. Champions League, do you think it's going to be a slightly tougher challenge than maybe what some of the Serie A sides have faced against Juve? Because these are two sides that are desperate for European glory.
They are, definitely. Well, obviously, when we saw Juventus at the weekend, they didn't have a good result at Fiorentina. And I think, obviously, the Spanish press have kind of seized on that. And, you know, Fiorentina scoring four against Juventus, it certainly will give Madrid a big kind of boost ahead of this game. You know, obviously Madrid, as you say, they haven't been at their best this season yet. They're still kind of finding their feet a little bit under Ancelotti. So that will be an interesting game. And you back Madrid, I think, to get the result. But it's going to be an interesting one.
There's a player in the Madrid ranks that really has just found form at the right time this season. Angel Di Maria has been superb for the majority of his playing time on the pitch. If Bale's fit and healthy, do you bring him back immediately for either this tie or El Clasico, or do you think about sticking with Di Maria and Ronaldo on those flanks?
I think at the moment you have to, you know, you're totally right. You have to stick with Di Maria because he's been excellent. He's been outstanding. I mean, against Malaga, he was perhaps the pick of the Madrid players. He was the one who made the breakthrough in the end, and he's been excellent this season. Much more consistent, perhaps, than we've seen him in previous seasons. So, he needs to keep that up as well. Obviously, he's got the added pressure now of Bale pushing him for a place. But I think he's responding to the challenge. And Bale, you know, is perhaps still short of full fitness. He needed a pre-season. He didn't really have one. So at the moment, you've no need to change things. I think you keep Di Maria in the team and you use Bale as a very expensive impact substitute.
I always love spending £86 million on my bench warmers. When you look at Gareth Bale, there was talk, especially in the last week or so, about certain doctors at certain clubs describing him as a potential croc, an injury-bound player. Is there anybody who's continuing to think like this? Is there a few questions being raised about the fitness of Bale, or is this just because he didn't have a good pre-season or any pre-season?
I don't know. I'm not so sure. There's always lots of people with lots of things to say. And, you know, Real Madrid have dismissed a lot of those reports. I think time will tell. But actually, when he came on against Malaga and he won that contentious penalty, I thought he looked quite lively. I mean, he's still lacking. He's still some way short of the full fitness. He's not quite the Gareth Bale that we saw at Tottenham last season and in previous seasons. It does take him some time to work his way back to full fitness when he has these problems. But I do think the issues that we've heard about have been exaggerated. So, we'll see.
But I think it's
been a little bit exaggerated.
Well, and finally, the goalkeeping position continues to throw up rumours at Real Madrid, with Casillas saying that he's going to give it 3 months, and then if there's a chance to leave, he'll take it. Can you imagine Iker Casillas playing in anybody's shirt apart from Real Madrid? So is this a real serious possibility now?
Well, I think it must be a possibility. because he's not in the team, and being in the team just for the Champions League is probably not going to be enough for him. I mean, he's such a good goalkeeper. He's been consistently described as the world's best over the last 10 years or so, and he won't want to be on the bench for too long. I do find it hard to see him leaving in January. He's about to, he and Sara Carbonero are going to have a baby boy that's going to be born around the end of December, perhaps beginning of January. So I don't think it's going to be a time where he's going to think about moving. But if the situation hasn't improved by the summer, then I think he'll look at his options, just like any other player of his calibre would do.
Who's better out of him and Buffon? Obviously, we're expecting to see both of them tonight. Who's do you think? Because they've been around for about the same time, haven't they?
They have. I mean, Buffon is actually that much older. I think for several years now, Casillas has had the edge on Buffon. I think perhaps even going back as far as the Euros in 2008. When they came head-to-head and in that quarter-final match. And obviously Spain won it on penalties. And I thought Iker had the edge on Buffon then. Buffon's in kind of the twilight of his career, still a wonderful goalkeeper and has been an absolutely fantastic goalkeeper. But I think there was a point where Casillas overtook Buffon. It's going to be interesting to see, because obviously being Champions League, Iker's going to be playing tonight again.
Let's hope Iker can pull out a performance. We're running out of time with you, Ben, so we're going to have to side-skirt Sociedad against Manchester United and look to El Clasico coming up this weekend. I mean, the build-up's probably not started as much just yet because we have the Champions League action in midweek, but is there a loss in kind of venom between these two sides in the build-up because there's no Mourinho, Pep Guardiola undertone to this game now?
Well, I think that's right. I think there's definitely an element of that. And, I don't think either coach wants to really start a war with the other one. I think obviously we've got two new coaches, Ancelotti at Madrid and Martino at Barcelona, and they're both kind of pretty diplomatic and respectful guys. I mean, there's been one or two things that have gone back and forth, but particularly when Martino spoke about the Bale transfer being expensive and saying, Barca wouldn't spend that kind of money, and that kind of annoyed Ancelotti a little bit. But it didn't really become anything bigger than that. And I think there's healthy respect, and that's obviously taken a little bit of bite out of the build up. But obviously once the two teams get out on the pitch, it's a Clásico, and it's going to be an incredible atmosphere as ever.
What does this new playing style of Barca's, people suggesting that they are moving away slightly from tiki-taka, do you think that does anything to the way Madrid approach the game, does it make it easier, maybe a slightly more direct bit of football from Barca helping to expose Real Madrid after they push forward?
Well, I do think Barcelona are mixing it up a little bit. I think Martino is keen to add a few alternatives to the game, longer passes when possible and when needed. Some of the play is a little bit more direct, but I think it's too early to say that they're moving away from tiki-taka. I mean, I think the basis of their playing style is the same and will remain the same, particularly with the players that they have. In terms of Madrid, obviously we've seen that Ancelotti is trying to move Madrid away a little bit away from this counter-attacking kind of style we saw under Mourinho, in favour of a kind of a more technical game, more possession-based, more passing. And it hasn't quite worked yet. We saw signs of improvement against Malaga. But actually, in a Clásico at Camp Nou, Mourinho's tactics were very, very effective. So I wouldn't be surprised to, if just for this game, for Ancelotti to say, okay, we're going to play a bit of a direct kind of a counter-attacking style, because they know that, recent results have showed them that works against Barcelona.
Are we going to see it like Jose Mourinho's first El Clásico in the Camp Nou, the 5-0 loss early on in that season? I mean, have you got a prediction for the score? I know it's early days yet, Ben, but...
I was at that game, actually. It was unbelievable. And Mourinho didn't even come out in the second half. He just stayed on the bench. I mean, it was... and he tried to play a little bit open. I think his mistake was that... was perhaps listening a little bit to the to the media that said that Madrid have to play attractive football, attacking football. And he went to Barcelona, and they were 1 point ahead or 2 points ahead in La Liga at that stage, and played too much for an open game, and they just paid the price, didn't they? And even when things changed around, you know, Barca were already three up or so, and it was just a disaster for Mourinho and for Madrid. So I think Ancelotti will be wary of that. And I think that he'll be ready. And I don't think we're going to see them play too open, because he knows full well what Barcelona can do.
And we know exactly what Barcelona can do as well. Ben, appreciate you taking the time out. I'm sorry we've taken so much of it today, mate, but we will let you get back off and out to writing your previews for El Clasico for the weekend and enjoying all the hype around the big game.
Excellent, Ollie. Thanks very much. Thanks. And good luck with your voice.
Cheers, mate. Thanks very much. Ben Hayward of Goal.com joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things El Clasico. And of course, Barca, Madrid, Sociedad and Atletico Madrid. Unfortunately, didn't have enough time to cover a bit of Sociedad, but hopefully our next guest will. Of course, we will have El Clasico build-up coming up as well once the Champions League is finished this week. I apologise once again for the almost whispering at points. And hopefully our next guest on the show will be able to help me out and do plenty of the talking. A big thanks to Ben there for just giving us the long answers, which are always great when you've got a voice like this. Joining me now on the line to talk all things Champions League football from last night and from this evening as well is the man that we love to have a good old chinwag with about football, the big bad Brassel, Mr. Andy Brassel, on the line today. Andy, mate, how you doing? A pleasure to hear your voice once again. I'm sure it's not nice to hear mine, mate.
No, you sound like a soul singer. I like it.
Yeah, maybe it's the time to start making those demos while I can before it wears off and cash in on the husky deep blues voice, man. We do need to get into some Champions League preview and reaction from last night as well. Let's start with the German side, Dortmund, against Arsenal yesterday. It was almost like two classic teams playing classic Champions League football, really. An away side who would have been happy with a point but wanted to take the chances if they came against a home side, Arsenal, that really did look like they wanted to get 3 points at home to ensure they have a good record and leaving them an easier run on the road for this group.
That's right, Ollie. Well, of course, Arsenal were big in it. Dortmund were big in it as the return to London after the final. But it struck me more as, the return to a Highbury sort of 23 months later, after their last Champions League game there, it was an extraordinary difference. I thought, you know, that they were just a little bit of a pale version of their Bundesliga selves when they came. And, you know, at that point they were really inexperienced in the Champions League, in the sense that they hadn't been in it in 10 years. So despite the fact they were reigning Bundesliga champions, you know, they were playing okay, but like punished for mistakes. Whereas, you know, you got the sense that they were, you know, a lot more calm, a lot more collected, a lot more of a game plan to adjust to the level this time. And, you know, I don't think you can underestimate it when you figure out how well Arsenal have been playing recently as well. It's a tremendous effort. And as you say, they took the chances very, very well indeed.
Arsenal did give them those chances. Will Dortmund feel a little fortunate to have come away from the Emirates with 3 points last night?
No, because I think when, you know, you have a game of such an intense tactical concentration, it's impossible to make no mistakes for 90 minutes. It's just not possible, whatever the team. And, you know, just Dortmund took the goals very well. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And both Lewandowski and Mkhitaryan showed their quality in doing that. But I think it's really interesting to see how Arsenal are going to play the second leg now.
We don't need to remind you, Andy, of an incident in the Champions League final involving Lewandowski, but his flailing arms reoccurred again. Should it have been another sending off, possibly, for the Polish striker?
Well, I've only really had one glance of it, so I can't say. It didn't look deliberate, so I would suggest a booking, but as I say, I've only seen it once.
And Arsenal, of course, continuing fine form in the Premier League. Champions League now, it's very difficult for them. Do they have to go to Germany and get a result against Dortmund away from home in the next game?
Yeah, I think they do, because I think a draw at least, because, of course, Napoli are going to go on. And probably beat Marseille at the São Paulo. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The situation that Arsenal really want to avoid, if they possibly can, I'm not really sure if they will be able to, is going to the São Paulo on the final match day needing a result. I think that's really the nightmare scenario that they need to avoid. But, you know, they always knew it was going to be a tough group.
The other club from England in action last night was Chelsea. They took on Schalke. It was a very weakened Schalke side, and you didn't realise how weak it was until Chelsea had bagged two past them and Fernando Torres is celebrating both goals. What did you make of Schalke's performance last night?
I didn't think they were that bad, actually, after the early goal. I think for the rest of the first half, they were strong. They pushed nicely. But, you know, the way that Schalke are, you know, they're always going to be open. They're always going to attack. They can't play containment. They can't play patient. That's not what they do. But, you know, they got caught very, very early on the break. They were a very early stage in the game, I thought, for that second goal. We know they're not great at defending set pieces, as proved for the first goal. It was one of those games where you thought, well, Ivanovic and Terry are going to be rubbing their hands in delight, really, in the prospect of this. But I think it was predictable the way it panned out. Like, that Schalke can do it for a little bit against the very top teams. But they really struggled to put it together for the whole time. I mean, the only decent team they've beaten this season really is Bayer Leverkusen in Kevin Prince-Boateng's debut. And, you know, I think you looked at the Bayern Munich game and when they lost 4-0 in Gelsenkirchen, and you thought, well, they really could have a problem here against Chelsea. And so it proved. Chelsea didn't even need all of the game to walk away with the result.
What did you think of the role and the position that Boateng was played in last night? Obviously, missing Jan-Klaus Huntelaar, and Boateng almost played as that lead role in Schalke's attack. It's not somewhere we've seen him thrive really before, is it, Andy?
No, but ever since he's got there, he has played as a 10, so with Draxler moving out to the left. So it's not really that much of a leap forward. And, you know, he is someone who they expect to animate the team in an attacking sense. He had 4 goals in 7 games before last night, of course, including penalties. But nevertheless, his role is very much an attacking one. And, you know, it's to lift the fans as well, get that fantastic crowd of 61,500 behind them. And, you know, they're a bit stuck for options, really, without Huntelaar. And he's had a spell of bad luck ever since he signed that new contract, really. So you have to feel for Huntelaar, but they're going to have to find a solution because they can't pile it all on Adam Jalai for the next 3 or 4 months. You know, there is a lot of youth in that team as well. And, you know, they're in a situation before where Draxler was kind of pulling them forward and inspiring them. And, you know, it can't be all down to him and Boateng. They have to find another way.
Just finally, on last night's action, a 10-man Porto lost to Zenit St. Petersburg. You're quite a fan of Porto, Andy. I remember chatting with you at the Emirates Cup about them. I mean, normally do so well at the Dragão, and Zenit, who have underperformed really in Champions League outings over the past few years, a little surprising this result, or was it well-deserved on your belief?
I think Porto were a bit unlucky. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I thought, of course, that they played for 84 minutes plus stoppage time with 10 men after Herrera was sent off. And, you know, by the letter of the law, you could justify it. But I thought the second booking for encroachment particularly was very, very harsh and, you know, completely changed the game. And, you know, Porto, they were the better team in the first half still, but they understandably tired as it went on. I was impressed by Zenit's patience. I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, they've been overcome by nerves in Champions League situations before. So it was really encouraging for them. Ulk is obviously in phenomenal form at the moment, and he was their most dangerous player in the whole game. I thought Yuri Lodygin was really good in goal, and he's been great this season too. And for them to do without Malafaire is a bit of a leap, but you know, he's come from, you know, mid-table Greek Super League to UEFA Champions League, and he's done a brilliant job. So I think there's things to be positive about for Zenit. You know, obviously Porto could still qualify, but I think, whereas it was unfortunate about the sending off. I do think that, you know, there's a sense that they don't want to overcook that as an excuse, certainly in the media out here, because I think a lot of people said, you know, that's for little teams really to complain about decisions. For us, you know, we should be able to do better than that. And there's a certain defensive naivety that's really not good enough at Champions League level that they're suffering from this season. And all eyes are on the coach, Paulo Fonseca. There's growing pressure on him.
Let's move away from the past, Andy, and look ahead to the future. There's some cracking games coming up this evening. Arguably, one of the most enthralling ties to have a look at is Shakhtar against Bayer Leverkusen, because this is really going to be a big decider of one of the sides that's going to make their way through, potentially with Manchester United as one of the top two in this group.
Yeah, it really is. And I think it's a big test for Shakhtar and their new players, because, you know, they had a shaky sort of start to this season. You know, they're betting in some new players who, just a couple of weeks ago, Michail Lucescu said, have not been much use to us so far. But, you know, they've really been lacking the guiding hand of some of their more experienced players who've left, and especially I'm thinking of Fernandinho. But really, it's been up to Dario Cierna, Jaroslav Rakitski to come to the fore and sort of guide them. Of course, when Bernard beds in, they'll have one heck of a number 10. I think there's any doubt about that. But, you know, even in the first game against Real Sociedad, they were pretty lucky, even though they won 2-0. They were battered for most of that game. And, you know, it was just their experience, their extra experience that saw them through. And I wonder, really, if that is what will give them the edge over Leverkusen. You know, Leverkusen are an explosive team. But, again, they were second best to Real Sociedad in the last game at the Bayer Arena. So I've not been convinced by them so far. It was a pretty below par performance at Old Trafford. It's one of those groups that, you know, seemed mouth-watering at the start, but, you know, now you... It's not really got off the ground. It reminds me a bit of that Arsenal, Dortmund, Marseille, Olympiacos group from a couple of years ago. You know, there are four attacking teams in there who are exciting. But the quality's not been great so far. Of course, United have had their own problems too. So I'm really hoping for two games between Shakhtar and Leverkusen, and between United and Real Sociedad, which are really going to light the group up.
How many similarities do you get with this Leverkusen side from Dortmund? Maybe the quality's not the same running through it, but the fact that they're most likely going to be in the Champions League next year from the way they've started this Bundesliga season, and just the learning curve that they're going through with Champions League football, how does it compare to the one that Dortmund went through over the last few years?
Well, it's an interesting point. I think they're dealing with that curve a little bit better than Dortmund did back then. They've made... less amateurish mistakes they've been punished for so far, because of course they won that game against Real Sociedad despite being second best for a lot of the second half. There's a big question mark over the defence still. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Old Trafford, though, all over the shop. So I think how they'll stand up against Shakhtar's attacking players, and especially players like Luis Adriano and Alex Teixeira, who are well versed in what it takes to do well and to score goals at this level. It'd be interesting to see how they deal with that. I mean, you know, you think they've lost experience to Leverkusen in the summer, and even the experience that brought in Enis Bahic, who's 33, and you know, he was making his debut at Old Trafford in the Champions League. So it is a leap for them. Of course, I think from, if you're talking about them, comparing them with Dortmund from a shape perspective, I think Leverkusen are almost a little bit more Dutch, really. It's a classic 4-3-3, and you know, whichever way they do it, whether they have Kiesling and Sidney Sam and Son on the left, or you know, whether they've been trying to solidify things by bringing in Emre Can, who, talking of learning curses, is making a big step up from Bayern Munich's second team in the fringes of their first to playing in the Champions League. I do think that attacking animation, A, leaves them a bit open, but B, gives them a chance, and certainly gives them a chance of producing some really entertaining football.
And talking of Bayern Munich, Andy, just finally, their fixture against Victoria Pilsen tonight. This is surely Bayern Munich's chance to throw their name in the hat for possibly the goal of the week. We saw Wilshers, we saw Ibrahimovic, we saw Cavani, and we saw Kasami as well. I mean, this should be a walk in the park for Bayern Munich, and another strong start for Pep and his side.
It should be. And you think, you know, how they absolutely battered CSKA on the first day, and what they did to Manchester City on the second, you know, it shows really how far ahead they are of everyone else. And, you know, it was really the Cisco performance that fired them this season. It was the first time they really clicked and you thought, you know, this is Guardiola's side. You know, it was the first time he'd really, I think, put his prints on the side. And, you know, that was augmented even more at City Manchester Stadium. I'll be interested to see the sort of team he picks. I wouldn't be surprised to see Zerdan Shaqiri and a few other players who we don't always see starting get a little go. We know the quality that they've got throughout the squad. But for me, I think there's a platform for the Pilsen players as well. You know, you look at their players, going back to Pilar, going to Wolfsburg, you know, they're always going to be scouted. Because they're the very best Czech players by mid-level Bundesliga sides. And of course, like Freiburg did a bit of business there this season as well. So I think it's a platform for them to show how they can do to move on, because Pilsen won't be able to keep the very best of those players, apart from Horvath, because he's so old. I think they've got to be looking at these two games as an opportunity, not just to bring pride to their club, because of course, you know, they've done well in Europe before. You know, they drew with Milan, they beat Atletico in the Europa League last season, so they're no mugs. But really, for the best of them to get onto the next stage of their careers.
Andy, just finally with Bayern, they've played Lahm in that holding midfield role, but bringing Schweinsteiger back in once he came back from injury, and not maybe having him as that double pivot that we saw last season under Heynckes, but having him there as maybe another slightly more defensive option in the heart of the pitch, is that Pep finding a compromise between the style that he initially brought in at the beginning of the season with Schweinsteiger on his own, and now Lahm on his own, but with Schweinsteiger just slightly ahead?
Perhaps, but I think it's a question of fitness as well. You know, he's never had a fully fit squad for all of this season. So a lot of the difficult choices that he would have had to make, you know, if he was, you're talking about getting rid of the double pivot, whether it's Schweinsteiger or Javi Martinez or Schweinsteiger or Thiago Alcantara, you know, whether you switch Javi Martinez to centre-back, none of these have been live choices because not everyone's been fit at the same time. And as they recuperate, I think, over the coming weeks, you know, people have speculated Schweinsteiger would be the odd one out, even though he's, you know, very much a club institution and a German football institution. So I'll be interested to see, you know, now they're really hitting their straps, now they're getting a few players back fit, how A, he will make his decisions, B, he'll come to his equipe type, his favourite 11, and see how he keeps all of them happy.
We will see over the next few weeks, and Andy, we will be calling on you once again to give us your thoughts on all things European football and Bayern Munich as we continue throughout the season. But for today, mate, we will let you get back to your very busy schedule, and thank you so much for joining us today, man.
Real pleasure. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Andy Brassel there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking Champions League football with us here on the show. A bit of a preview to tonight's games and, of course, a look back at some of yesterday's games as well. Always a pleasure to have a chat with Andy. A big thanks to Ben Hayward there. And, of course, a big thanks to Andy Brassel for taking us through Tuesday night's... excuse me. Tuesday night's action from the Champions League and giving us a preview to some of tonight's games. Another big night of Champions League football, of course, and here to talk a little bit about it with me as well is Mr. Rafa G. And before we get you on the waves, Raf, I think everybody here at World Football Daily has to say a very big happy birthday to you, man. How are you?
I'm well. I'm enjoying enjoying my birthday. Really, to be honest, Juice, my birthdays just go by these days, I guess. They're not the...
That's what happens when you get old.
Yeah, it's just not like an uber crazy event. You know, my wife usually does something kind of nice for me. I'm a little bit nervous because she's been kind of playing it off like, you know, like she hasn't brought it up at all. So that's strange.
You're expecting like something fairly... How old are you now? 48, 49? What are we talking?
Yeah. you know, I'm somewhere between 27 and 29, I think. I think I turned 29 this year, I think. Which is really scary as well because, I remember thinking about like 30-year-olds as like freaking old people. But
it's scary you can't even remember your name, your age.
I don't remember my age. Like I seriously get lost sometimes. Sometimes I like call myself 27 and I'm 28. I would really have to stop and do the math, Juice. I'm pretty sure I was 28, and I think I'm 29 now.
You think you're 29?
Yeah, that's what happens to my birthdays. Is I just kind of, well, you know.
It just passes.
The good thing is I can't expect anything too crazy from my work because really nobody's there. Everybody's at this trade show that they we're doing in Orlando, and so there's like a skeleton crew at the AnaJet headquarters.
So maybe you have a couple of lunchtime brewskis during the Champions League football. You go out for dinner, lunch, and stuff. Maybe hit up one of the guys.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely. You know what? I actually stayed in yesterday to like watch the matches because I ended up being able to watch like three matches, on two screens in my computers. Just completely unbothered. And I think I'll probably stay here again, stay at work again for the matches just because, again, Juice, I don't know. Unless if you were here in the States and we were like, hey, this is a Champions League match day, let's go hit up the King's Pub or, grab some food and drinks, while watching the match midday, like we did that one day at the beach. Now, I can understand that. That's an event. That's a day. That's a homie, really. But I mean, I'm not gonna ask anybody at my work, hey man, you want to go watch some Champions League soccer with me? They'd be like, are you kidding me? You want me to go watch soccer in the middle of the day while I'm on my lunch?
Yeah. We'll pound a couple of pitches while we do it, man. It'll be fun. Don't worry. Are you high?
So, That's a bit difficult thing to do at my work. So again, I can just appreciate why. Oh, and the other thing is there's really no place around like my work that like there's a British pub like right down the street from us, across the street, but it only has like small televisions, and they only play like one game because they only have one channel, and it's really bad.
That's very much like a British pub then, mate.
It's probably just like a British pub, yeah. And we only, so basically I just sit at my desk and I enjoy the matches there. And the funny thing is that, if you look around kind of our group of friends, our colleagues around the country, I find that a lot of people end up sitting in front of they'll set up their TV, they'll set up a laptop, they'll set up an extra TV. Or like another computer or an iPad of some sort, and they're tweeting away on their phone and stuff. That's really hardcore. That's really hardcore.
It's the way to do it, man. It's the way to do it. It makes it difficult, but concentrating on like three games of football at once is a feat to behold.
Now there was a time when we used to have a sponsor at Capital City Grill, and we would have to go to the bar. Before record our show live at the place, and this bar was literally just absolutely fantastic feat of mankind. They had something like 56 televisions, all of which were over 40 inches tall. They had a straight up big screen like projection screen style movie theater screen. The major games would always be playing on. So anyways, the point being is that when we would go there, and especially right now when they're in the group stages and you're talking about like, eight games a day, every single game was on in front of you, Juice. Now, I don't know about you, but I get like it's almost like, overstimulus, like I get kind of discombobulated and confused, and I start to kind of like turn in on myself a little bit, freaking out, and then I started thinking, why I can't watch any of these games. So
you know how you get around this, don't you? It's very simple. You work in packs. You don't go to the bar alone because to start off that can just be kind of depressing at times. So you sit there and you work in packs as groups. So you have one guy facing a few screens, and if something happens, he alerts the attention of everybody else. Meanwhile, somebody else is watching a few screens, alerts the attention of people if something big happens in those games. Because the beauty of football and televised football is that we get replays, and we get so many replays of every incident. So you don't have to worry. The screen swiping, when they do all the little fades and stuff to cut to a replay, right, that'll attract your eye attention of one of the games that you're watching, so you'll be seeing something. And then you can go, hey guys, check it out. Look, it's just a controversial throw-in decision. But you know, it means God, we sound good today, Ref. It means it means that, you know, you can watch all of the action, or at least the main bits of action, and then you can go home and watch all the highlights all in a nice highlight show, man. That's how we do it. That's how you got to do it.
I see it. But I definitely enjoy being able to take in a game as a whole. It's almost like a theatrical presentation.
That's why I like watching it at home. I have to say, I do like watching it at home, because you don't get distracted by what's going on in the bar, or, you know, getting some beverages or whatever. You just think about sitting down in front of the TV and watching the game. Where are your favorite places to watch football? Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 in the Facebook page as well. Raf, before we get into some Champions League, we need to check in with a little bit of CONCACAF Champions League. And I've just got one question to ask you. Do you know if the Azteca has been built on some ancient Indian burial ground, which now the spirits of are getting really hacked off with the fact that there's been all these noisy Mexican football fans on top of this burial ground for the last however many years, and now they're starting to exact revenge on Mexican football and Mexican sides that play in the Azteca? Because Club America last night, I was astonished, absolutely astonished to see this result coming up. I was covering a different game from Argentina, but I was peering around the corner every so often to look at an international feed of this game. And Club America against Alajuelense, who I've been lucky enough to actually watch Alajuelense in CONCACAF Champions League action. Nobody gave him a chance. You know, I said this I put it out on Twitter to a couple of people, some good friends of the show. I said to Eric Gomez and Juan Arango, you know, like, what are the odds of the way Mexican football is at the moment? What's the odds on Club America getting knocked out tonight? I mean, would you be really willing to put a bet on the new El Tri manager when you look at what's happened to the last managers in the last few months? And Juan Arango gives me the classic Juan Arango text back. Whenever he predicts something to me, I swear, it never comes through.
Yeah, to do the opposite.
Because he texts me, said, America should win running away with this. Eric Gomez says to...
you should have headed straight
for the bookies. Yeah. Eric Gomez saying, guessing this is an America win for sure, especially given their wish to avenge the earlier loss in Costa Rica. Of course, Alajuelense did beat them in that first tie in the group stage of CONCACAF Champions League. Alajuelense only needed a point last night. They got three in the Azteca.
Yeah.
I mean, what should be Club America's powerhouse and the side that's cruising away at the top of the Mexican League. I mean, Herrera, the new El Tri manager, wasn't actually on the bench, wasn't coached the team last night. The under-20s manager was for Club America. But that's no excuse, surely. I mean...
That was the only excuse that I could come up with, is that maybe there's just a little bit of a kind of disjointed connection between the players and the coaches, and who's really kind of taking the lead of this team. It shouldn't be. I mean, it's I wouldn't have ever expected this, but
do the Mexican Football Federation actually sack a guy before he's even coached a Mexico game? You know, they're looking at Herrera, and obviously, you know, we were talking the other day with Kim about how the backroom staff of Club America are going to be loaned to El Tri as well. I mean, the Mexican Football Federation going to be saying, you know what, we might go looking somewhere else. You know, Chivas Guadalajara's backroom staff are quite good too. You know, maybe we won't loan you guys out. I mean, disaster, absolute disaster for Club America. I mean,
yeah, no, I mean, and like you said, for it to happen at the Azteca is just even, I mean, really, really, just one to lose to the Alajuelense is one thing, but to lose at the Azteca is just, I mean, wow, it's like compounding it and exponentially making it worse.
The footballing gods weren't with them. I mean, Jimenez. Jeez, I'm really struggling with this view. Jimenez striking the post from like 5 yards out last night, and just
too many silent J's, man.
That's probably it. That's probably it. And also, you know, the fact only 20,000 people there. I know it's a midweek game. It's only against Alajuelense, and people are expecting them to cruise past the Costa Rican side. But surely,
par for the course, really. I mean, for your major, I mean, that's actually a pretty good turnout. If you look at how many people show up for a, like, you know, a Galaxy game or things like that.
Yeah, I know, but Mexico football is a bigger sport than in the US, right?
I get that. I think it's probably pretty par for the course. It's a little bit interesting also to think like you said, the way that it brings in the national team as well, it's almost like it's a slap in the wrist for saying, you know, okay, look, you're getting a little too excited about the fact that you got qualified, or, you know, you're still in for a chance at Brazil 2014. But you know, don't get too high on your horse, because we will knock you down. And this is what still can happen. We will, you know, like you said, the football god saying, we will let you or make you lose to Alajuelense.
But as well, this is meant to be like the golden generation of Mexican football. I mean, we were talking about how good they've been.
Just a couple of years ago, they were winning the under-19
World Cup. But, you know, their young crop of players coming through were meant to be the guys that were going to guide them to, you know, one of the best Mexican national team sides that we've ever seen. And the national team's not doing it. And I'm not saying that the national team are affecting Club America or the result any way, shape or form last night, but it just doesn't paint a very pretty picture at all of football south of the border. I mean, I don't think anybody saw this one coming. However much it might have been joked about, however much I might have joked about it last night before the game on Twitter, I don't think any of us actually expected Club America, because I actually left work as well before this game had finished. And I had updates coming through, and it was just like 0-0, it's still 0-0, half time, 0-0, like what's going on, 1-0, 1-0, Alajuelense, what is going on here, like this is ridiculous. I got back home and checked the final score, and yeah, absolutely crazy.
Well, it's nuts to look at, like, the shots taken. I mean, America was far and far and above, just, you know, handling the possession, taking shots, putting shots on goal. I mean, they were shooting from way deep as well. They were trying, but it seemed like you said, there's some sort of hex on them. I throw my hands up, Jules. I don't know what to say about these guys.
Nobody knows what to say. I was covering a bit of Argentinian football last night, Ref. If you're interested at all, I was actually watching Vélez Sarsfield last night. I was very impressed by their youngsters. They've got a very good crop of youngsters coming through in this Vélez Sarsfield side. Number of players, kind of 18, 19. And first 45 minutes of that game especially were just crazy quick. You know, when you're impressed by a side where they're just racing all over the place and looking absolutely kind of rapido. You know, there a chap called Hector Canteros in the middle of the park, 24-year-old, was like fancy footwork beyond belief at points. Similarly, their left midfielder, Cabral. And really, I mean, this is the side that won the Argentinian Championship last season. And obviously there have been a number of changes, as there always is in Argentinian football. But this side at the moment is underachieving from what I saw last night. Because if they can play for 90 minutes like they played the first hour last night against Argentinos Juniors, then there is a big opportunity for them to put together a really good string of the results. It's unlikely they're going to repeat the feat of winning the Torneo Inicial this season, but very, very impressed. Mauro Zárate as well, former Birmingham City, Lazio and Inter striker.
I will tell you that I'm very impressed with your South American football coverage right now, and the way that you're breaking down the Primera División to Argentina. It's just fantastic, man. Wow.
You've got to do the research.
Can you give us any preview of the Copa do Brasil tonight, where we got Grêmio and Corinthians taking off and Flamengo and Botafogo as well playing tonight? I mean, wow. Some good games there in Brazil, sir. Can you give us anything on that?
I tell you what, I can give you a little bit on a couple of them. Grêmio been kind of king of the 0-0, 1-0 kind of result this year, so don't expect too much scoring from them. As for Botafogo against Flamengo, I covered that game. Watch out for, and it was mentioned actually by Tim Vickery when we were talking the other day, watch out for little Elias in the heart of the midfield for Flamengo. I was very impressed with him when I watched him. And there's a chap whose name escapes me at the moment, though, for Botafogo, plays out on the right wing. very quick, very young, reasonably tall but lanky, but very good in front of goal as well. Definitely keep an eye on him. If you give me, I'll have the name by the end of the show for keeping a heads up on
that. Look, Juice, you just went above and beyond what I was expecting. I mean, you are literally putting in the world of World Football Daily right there. So thank you very much. Where else would you like to go today? Because I'm enjoying this little trip around the globe.
Well,
so.
I was going to suggest that we bring it back to European football, my good man, because however much I do enjoy these ventures around the world with Mexican, Brazilian and Argentinian football being covered today, I do very much enjoy getting into, of course, the Champions League. And, you know, we've got another absolutely awesome set of games coming up tonight, Raf. Obviously the big one, Juventus against Real Madrid. We're talking with Andy Brassel about that. We'll be chatting tomorrow with Ben Hayward about Real Madrid and the El Clasico coming up and Barca's performance from last night. But aside from Madrid-Juventus, what other game are you really looking out for tonight? Because there's a few choice ties. There are some pretty weak ones as well, though, I have to say.
You know what? I think CSKA Moscow and Man City could be a very interesting game, and I'm actually going to catch that because it is obviously coming on a little bit earlier. But the other game that I'm actually really kind of interested in watching, and no, it's not Manchester United, but it's Anderlecht and PSG, and it's simply because I'm really interested to see if PSG can kind of keep this stunning form going. You know, like you said it at the weekend, the way that they're just kind of clicking through the gears was really impressive, and the way that they were able to just kind of control that entire game was very impressive to me. And I'd like to think that they can do the same away at Anderlecht. I'm probably going to be keeping my eye on that game outside of Real Madrid. And then, you know, whatever kind of highlights I can catch from the other matches, I will. I feel very bad for Victoria Pilsen. I mean, I hope that Pep's putting out his third team. I mean, seriously, like what? I mean, what could this that could be very, very bad. And unfortunately, you know, I kind of had a little bit of a rant about it yesterday, Juice. I don't want to ever call a team brave or little or anything like that. You know, these teams deserve the respect of being the class of Europe. And unfortunately, Bayern Munich is just a little more classy than Victoria Pilsen.
Just a tad, right? Just a tad.
Just a tad. That maybe that's a better wording for it, because, you know, there will probably be some very brave defending from Victoria Pilsen individually, but ultimately they're gonna get sliced up, in my opinion. So I don't even think the goal highlight reel is gonna be that interesting. So
what about last night's results, Raf? I mean, you predicted Barcelona to beat AC off the park, and I have to say that watching Kaká step back out onto the San Siro And generally the performance that he put in last night just showed how getting him on a free is an absolute steal for any club, let alone him returning to a place he feels comfortable. And I said AC Milan have got a great opportunity to grab a point. They did that against Barca. I mean, that's a very good point for Milan. Poor Milan, really, as well. You know, not a great side put out, but they seem to play reasonably well together as a unit. I was quite impressed, actually, by Milan last night in that sense. Barca,
as you should be.
Barca, there was a lot of disappointment surrounding Neymar. You know, sliced that volley early in the second half, I think it was, and really, in general, underperformed. Didn't provide a viable option for playing alongside Messi, really, at all. Do you think possibly big stage nerves, if you will, for Neymar? Obviously, you know, taking the side like Milan away in the San Siro.
Maybe trying to do too much or something. I'm not sure what it was, but he did kind of look he did not have a very impressive game for me. But it's still very early on. I really don't think that there's an opportunity that Celtic even come close to second position. You know, it's going to be a battle between Celtic and Ajax for the third spot, I think. And really the top two positions in that group really belong to AC Milan and Barcelona.
Rafa's been calling for the head of of Marseille's manager today, Raf. I mean, we were chatting with Jonathan Johnson about it yesterday, and you jumped on this bandwagon very early of of getting rid of and the name just completely escaped me once again here on World Football Daily. I love how the appropriate time, but of Marseille's head coach. You know, I mean, this surely maybe we're jumping to a little bit of a conclusion.
Well, I mean, perhaps the problem is that
Baup,
I mean,
there we go. Baup, by the way, sorry, yeah, Eli Baup. I mean, Jonathan was talking about it yesterday and saying that he is under a lot of pressure, maybe over kind of exceeded last season. Now expectations are too high, but
and a little uncomfortable in the position that he is. Like you guys were saying yesterday, you know, he is someone who is capable of doing well with very little. Marseille have, you know, almost an abundance, and they're asked to kind of compete all over the place, and I think he has a lot on his plate. I think potentially he could be a little out of his depth. I know it was a great kind of feat for Marseille to finish where they did last year, but you know, I think that there's bigger goals and there's higher higher levels of achievement in sights for them.
As Jonathan says, it's the not making the Europa League that might end up being the final axe, if you will,
sure,
to chop the head of Eli Baup away from Marseille, because obviously that group of death, it's so tight at the moment. Who do you see going through? I mean, obviously Dortmund's result last night, I thought, as I said to Andy, that Dortmund played it very much like an away side in the Champions League, of not rushing things, not going hell for leather. It's not a knockout stage game. They would have been happy with a point at the Emirates, but they just bided their time, waited for any opportunities that did come. Luckily, Arsenal presented a couple on a plate to them, and they snuck away with a 2-1 win. Arsenal played well, but Dortmund played well as well. You couldn't really begrudge either side 3 points last night. But
right,
that 3 points has now made it very difficult. You think Napoli will play against Marseille at home in the next game, should get 3 points from that. Dortmund will entertain Arsenal.
Arsenal has to travel to Dortmund and Napoli. Still.
And if Dortmund play well enough and get 3 points, that will mean that Napoli will have 9, Arsenal will have 6, Dortmund will have 9. Dortmund will be guaranteed a game against Marseille, which should be 3 points again. And Napoli and Arsenal will suddenly be really battling it out for that final place. It makes it a really, really close group. Can't pick it at the moment. But
I'm saying it now that, and this is obviously my bias against Arsenal, Dortmund and Napoli, 1 and 2, coming out of that group.
I see Rafa Benitez getting spooked by Alex Ferguson's comments in his book and ending up collapsing, I reckon. Rafa, oh no, oh no, he was calling me a control freak in his new book. I've got that coming today, so I'm going to have a read of it over the next few days and trying to share some thoughts on Fergie's book.
We're trying to get the ghostwriter on the program. So
Big Paul Hayward.
Yes, yeah. we're working on that, sir. So, yeah.
That would be excellent if we can get him.
It's very interesting how much attention is being paid. Obviously, you know, all respect due to Mr. Sir Alex Ferguson. But it's crazy that just the amount of attention, and I mean, for whatever book number this is of his, and for it to be coming out at the time it is, it's very impressive. You know, it shows the weight that this guy kind of carries still, even outside of the game.
It is pretty impressive of Sir Alex, how he's been able to wind up so many people. I mean, journalists are getting wound up by this book because they're saying he's not harsh enough and not kind of being dishing enough dirt on current players and current figures at Manchester United, yet he's very much willing to dish out the dirt and slate former players who aren't associated with the club anymore. Roy Keane, David Beckham, both taking a bit of a pasting from Sir Alex in his new book, and Keane coming out with the response last night that Sir Alex wouldn't know what loyalty was if it came down and kind of slapped him in the face. Roy Keane did, saying that on national television in the UK.
The funny thing is I can totally hear him saying it, you know, like the way I read his comments, and very, very witty comments. He's a very witty guy, if you ask me.
I think I like Roy Keane, mainly because I'm scared of him, but I do like him.
Me too. Me too.
He's a very fear-invoking man, that's for sure. We will talk a little bit more in the week about Sir Alex Ferguson's book as more quotes and lines continue to come out from it, but let's just remind ourselves very quickly of the fixtures coming up tonight in the Champions League. Leverkusen take on Shakhtar. United take on Real Sociedad. Very much like David Moyes' one, by the way. Just quickly, the Freudian slip from David Moyes, which was somebody said, you know, will you be reading Sir Alex's book? And he said, I'd love to read the book if I get enough time, but I don't have much time in this job right now, which you can take as I don't have much time as in I'm going to be sacked soon, or I don't have much time as in he's obviously a very busy man at the moment. His United side take on Sociedad at Old Trafford. CSKA Moscow take on Victoria Pilsen. Moscow take on Manchester City. Bayern Munich take on Victoria Pilsen. Benfica take on Olympiacos. Anderlecht take on PSG. Real Madrid take on Juventus. And Galatasaray take on Copenhagen. There's plenty more football coming your way. And by the way, the Brazilian I was thinking of from Botafogo, who impressed me, is Vitinho. Unfortunately, he has actually left the club since I last covered, commentated on him. But you might be able to see him tonight because he should be taking on Manchester City as part of CSKA Moscow. So very interesting to see if he does feature this evening. We'll leave it at that here on World Football Daily. A big thanks to our guest, Mr. Andy Brassel, as always, and I apologise for the croakiness of myself and Rafa. Once again, a big happy birthday to that man, and of course a big thank you to you guys for listening. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line on the Facebook page as well. This has been WFD. We will see you on the other side of the Champions League tomorrow. Have a good evening. Oh, sweet England, we'll be with you. Yeah.